Welcome back to Seen It Before, where we're probably going to say something stupid about your favorite movie because we've seen it all before. I'm Danny.
I'm Dan. I'm going to say something stupid that you're going to hate. So, surprise, Barbie beat Oppenheimer opening weekend.
Yeah,
I'm upset about that.
I'm willing to admit I severely misjudged the box office poll for both of these. I totally thought Oppenheimer was going to run away with it, and I just totally misunderestimated the demographic of gay people and women. So,
well, yeah, there is that. But and children, don't forget the children.
Well, yeah. So what I'm hearing though is like it's too smart for children. I haven't seen it yet, but like that's what I'm hearing.
Well, we'll talk more about that next week. But this week, Oppenheimer. So, Christopher Nolan's 12th. Ah. Yes, so let's introduce our guests right now. We got Cameron and Nick here with us, two guests who've been on plenty of times here at this point.
Yes, thank you for having
so
us.
So, no
thank
introductions you. Needed.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen this many white people in a room since the movie we saw over the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
For this time, in color.
Sometimes desaturated in black and white. Okay. Mm. Anyway, so this movie, it's a biographical epic that is just... It's depressing, to say the least, I guess.
Yep.
But also kind of like, it's an important movie. It's a very important movie for people to have watched, or to watch in this case. Probably Christopher Nolan's most important movie, I'd say.
Mm. Well, he considers it his most important movie, and then he considers it one of the most important stories in history to be told. So,
I mean, especially for...
It did change the tides.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It did make the world infinitely worse, arguably. So it should be talked about, and it should be a part of history everyone's familiar with. So essential. It's as essential, I'd say, as Passion of the Christ, if not more so, because we don't know if Jesus was real.
Mm. Hot take. Hot takes
right off the rip.
Right out of the
hot
grill.
Takes right off the rip. Here we go. All right off the rip. All right. So this movie made $80 million opening weekend. You're just over $80 million. And on a $160 million budget, somewhere in that ballpark.
Oh, I thought it was 100.
No, I thought it was too. Then I relooked it up and it was 160. So it made at least half its budget back.
There you go.
But, you know, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah. For an R-rated movie.
An R-rated 3-hour movie about, like, a bunch of guys sitting in rooms talking to each other.
In IMAX. Big guys on screen talking.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just fantastic. Anyway, beautiful. So let's get right into talking about Oppenheimer. So my first note is, this movie could use subtitles. This movie really could, with all the accents going around and everywhere. I mean, it was hard to pay attention to all the different timelines going on. And
I agree, but disagree. There's only really one scene that I had an issue hearing it. Mm-hmm. And it was like the scene where like...
the bass.
Where you just need, like... Well, yeah, there's a shit ton of bass. But like it was just like where like... You have to just feel the scene, and you totally can understand what, like, you know, George Lucas always said, if you can mute a movie and understand what's going on, that makes it a good movie. You could totally do that with that one scene that I had a problem with. So I think it's
fine. But I like subtitles.
He definitely...
You got me hooked on that shit.
Seth got me hooked on that,
He could have used subtitles in Tenet, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
The sound mixing in
the movie I fell asleep on?
Yeah.
In theater?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to go over how did we see Oppenheimer? I saw it at a standard projection screen at the Madison Theater.
Oh, I saw RPX.
I did RPX.
Cinemax, or Cinemark's version of...
So we compromise. We all compromise. So Christopher is happy with none of us. He's like, you guys saw it wrong. Yeah. You guys fucked up.
That's something that I love about Nolan is he's such a tech geek. And he cares a lot about projection and whatnot. And I think that kind of hurt Tenet in a bit because he said that he optimized Tenet's sound mix for the best possible theater. He wasn't thinking about any other theaters. So maybe if we saw it in IMAX in a nice large screen, maybe some dialogue would have been more audible.
Well, the dialogue is better. It doesn't mean the movie's better.
Well, yes. I understand that.
That's the thing. I think that's why I like Blu-ray releases with like with stuff, because they have different mixes.
Right.
Yeah. I think when you get the Blu-ray mix for this one, I think the standard one should be like at like at most like 5.1.
Yes.
And then you have the options for the 7.1s and stuff, and then even stereo if you, you know, if you have nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like that should be the standard instead of like, because you know they always put the most complex mix at top.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, yeah. You know, I have to go in the settings and I have to know what I'm doing. You know, Joe Schmo who just gets his Blu-rays is gonna have no idea
right
what to do.
Mm-hmm. Before you go off on a tangent about all this stuff, like we're not talking about Tenet, we're talking about Oppenheimer. So
yeah, well, Oppenheimer is amazing.
So okay. We got Hoyt, so. We've got our boy Hoyt Van Hoytma coming back for the cinematography for Oppenheimer. Yes. Oh my
Dunkirk
god.
Dunkirk and Tenet and this one. So.
And Nope. Let's not forget Nope.
Well, I'm talking about Nolan.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah. Oh, they're I always thought team. It was Wally Pfister.
No.
Well, he used to do it forever.
Older like, stuff like for Dark Knight,
I
think,
right?
Yeah, I feel like Interstellar was his last with Wally, and then he...
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's only been working with Hoyt since Dunkirk.
That's interesting, because maybe it just might be Nolan, the way he like requests things, but it's like, I can always kind of tell... Like I could tell the trailer, like this was a Nolan movie just based on the cinematography.
Yeah.
But I always thought that was Wally Pfister.
Yeah.
But I guess, so I just must
it's
be
his
Nolan.
Visual style. I guess it comes across no matter what cinematographer right. he has, I think.
And just speaking of light, the way he uses flashes in this movie are incredible. Especially when we get in the second half after the Trinity test.
Yeah.
Those flashes of white are absurd. Yeah,
we'll get to that scene.
We're going to get to that scene.
God. I think it's my favorite
scene.
We'll get
to those scenes, plural, should we say.
And for me, that's what gets into my favorite parts of the movies is the subjectivity of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It gets really exciting, especially in the last hour. But throughout the movie, they have this kind of non-chronological editing, which I think works in some parts and doesn't work in other parts. Mm. What do we think about the structure of the film?
All right. Structure.
I'm a structure guy.
You said his word.
Right. I could definitely follow it the entire way through. I was plugged in though.
Yeah.
I could definitely see where like a few, like at first, I was just like, okay, cause I was trying to like figure out why black and white, why color.
Right.
I read it later, but cause I had my theory about it. It got confirmed, but at first I'm thinking like, oh, black and white's after the bomb. But then they're at the hearing and then it's color. So I'm just like, I was confused and I was trying to think about that. And then, that disoriented me even more. And then getting further into the movie, then it was like, I knew the rhythm of it better. So like, I was like, I was into it, but I'm not sure what you guys think.
Right.
I was, inebriated the first time I saw it. Cause Barbenheimer was a thing. I probably should not have been drinking.
Wait, did you see Barbie first or Oppenheimer first?
Oppenheimer.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure.
The proper way to watch.
Yes,
that.
I agree.
But wait, I'm confused. You got blasted to see Oppenheimer, a 3-hour character piece?
I had a few drinks, though, and I was just like, okay, I am.
Because of Barbie?
No, just Oppenheimer weekend. It's just like
I get that. Yeah.
Type of thing, yeah. Anyway, I did not like this movie the first time I watched it. Mm. I will say that right now.
Mm. I had the text to prove it.
But I understood it's a great movie, but I did not like it the first time. Mm-hmm. So I saw it again the next day.
There you go.
Sober as a rock. And it was fucking fantastic.
There you go.
Like,
there you go.
I was like, whoa. Yeah. It sucked me right in from the beginning, as you were saying, and it didn't stop. I was just like, holy shit, I'm actually following it. Okay, this is good. This is good. This is good. Oh my god, this is depressing.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to
and
rewatching.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah, I left the theater with so much anxiety. I'm like, oh my god, because like
this
I just saw
AI, right?
Yeah, I saw Mission Impossible 2 weeks ago and I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, it taps into real world anxieties and like this one just exacerbated that. I'm just like, this could happen again.
Your arms race, all that fun stuff.
All right. So let's actually get into the movie a little bit here. So the first part we get to is Oppenheimer or Oppie, should I say? I'm just gonna call Oppie because
Oppie.
Our boy. You texted me like, I love how Oppie is a thing.
Yeah, it's just Oppie's the how we're calling.
It's like Chappie. Yeah,
but not awful.
But good.
So it starts off with him, you know, being tortured of visions of the future and that kind of stuff. And
very
and his reflection of the trials and where it's been going. So he's just like, oh boy, this is, it just set the tone right away. And you're just like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
Those particles floating around. I just said, it's like Terrence Malick in Tree of Life.
Tree of Life, yeah.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm thinking of that. I'm thinking of Nick Rogue. I'm thinking of Don't Look Now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also thinking of Twin Peaks, of course, episode 8.
Oh yeah, of course.
Which is the easy comparison. But that
the
idea of evil explosions. Being created almost in this atom bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Death. Do we know how they made those, got those shots of the atoms?
No.
Because, like, I mean, knowing,
apparently.
I would assume it's like a microscope, and then they did something with the sound design.
Yeah, yeah, because no one's known to work with scale.
Yeah.
Which is really an ingenious way to keep everything practical, like the whole car chase in The Dark Knight with the trucker.
Yeah,
that's all miniatures. Mm-hmm. That's none of that's to scale. Well, yeah. It is to scale, but not.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah.
Let's see. So he studies abroad at this point and meets Heisenberg and all these
Walter World White.
Not to be
I shit my pants.
Not to be confused.
Not Walter White.
Breaking Bad.
I'm like, what? We're gonna get a Bryan Cranston, which actually, unironically, he would have been a great addition to this cast.
Oh, he would have worked very well.
He could have been Truman.
I was thinking that.
I thought it was interesting that, like, well, he. Bryan Cranston played what? Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, Lyndon B. Johnson.
And then Gary Oldman, who plays Truman in this, played
Churchill.
In this.
Yeah,
like, he's just
doing all the war criminals.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got his bases covered.
So, but yeah, like it's the cast is
stacked,
unmatched. Insane. I is there any other like?
It's a huge scale of a movie.
Yeah,
there's so many people, and some of them don't get enough time.
Can we all go around and just pick one actor that we loved in the movie?
All right, so Danny.
Ben Safdie. Hands down, he's my favorite actor in the whole movie.
Really?
Yep.
Matt Damon.
I like this whole character.
Matt Damon all the way.
All the way.
Oh, my God.
Gary Oldman.
Oh,
wow.
His one scene. This isn't about
quite
you.
Some time.
Yeah. It's an incredible single scene.
Yeah, chilling. I'm going to have to say Jason Clark.
That crybaby back.
When he's,
oh, yeah, when he's yeah.
Grilling
Jason Clark, yeah.
You really learned to hate him.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this guy's a fucking asshole. He's hurting my dude Oppie. Leave Oppie alone.
And for me, that was some of the most dramatically exciting stuff was just
trial.
The trial of Oppie.
Yeah.
With
so well done.
Arguably the climax. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. What is the climax of Oppenheimer?
I'd say honestly, I'd say structurally but the thing is, I'd say structurally the climax is the argument scene where he's berating and like Oppenheimer like says like he fucks up in his statement.
Mm.
I think that's like that, but like obviously a secondary climax was the was the bomb. Obviously, I mean, like how can you not?
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I think you're right. It's not the bomb. The bomb is a little too soon to be the climax.
That's true.
Because there's still like an hour afterwards at least.
Which I love that structuring. It's so smart.
The climax might have been when he's doing that press conference and everyone's cheering for him.
Oh, my God.
And you kind of just realize, everyone's celebrating genocide. This is very bad.
Yeah.
That's
terrifying.
That's my favorite scene in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's definitely up
there
for me.
I physically felt like kind of ill.
Yeah.
Watching that. Oh man, why is he saying that?
Speaking of this ill scene, the girl whose face is peeling in that scene, that's Nolan's daughter.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that just wonderful?
Yeah, so that's fun.
Gives himself nightmares.
He makes it personal.
He makes it personal.
People make the mistake of calling Nolan a cold filmmaker. I don't think he is. I think he's very emotional.
Yeah.
I think this scene is bearing his heart on his sleeve. He's like, I'm scared for my daughter's life because of the world we're in.
The future of our children and
Inception
everything.
Is about his fear of losing his wife and his small kid.
Same thing with Interstellar.
Interstellar
as well.
Also about family.
Yeah.
But like Tenton and Dunkirk.
I think maybe where that comes from is that he has a hard time balancing it. You have a couple scenes of intense emotion, and then for the most part, it's just people coldly, logically telling you things. Mm-hmm. Like Anne Hathaway in Interstellar, like she had no
character. She's an exposition machine.
Same thing with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Inception. Like he's just there to say things to Elliot Page. So
explain
like,
the plot.
True. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, and I feel like Oppenheimer fits very well thematically into his catalog of people reckoning with the realities that they've created, the machines they've created. The idea of Inception, DiCaprio doesn't know if he's in a dream or not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We've got Guy Pearce in Memento, not being able to remember anything. And I feel like, I don't know, I really find his work to get more and more rich. And I feel like this is the apex, and I think he's going to turn in far more mature stuff.
This is definitely his most cerebral film. You really get into Oppenheimer's head, and you even get briefly into his wife's head. Like, it's the most, like, you know, personal, like, and, you know, psychological.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
She was another great addition. Emily Blunt had a great performance. I think she had two of the best lines in the entire movie. I forgot exactly what they were, but it was basically just like telling whoever's at the hearing just telling him off.
I love that
like scene. The back and forth, the rep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that scene and the scene where she's just after Jean dies and she's like comforting him in the woods. Mm-hmm. Those are two very good scenes with her. Everything else, she wasn't needed.
Because she's like, you know, like, get over yourself, but also still kind of comforting.
And just like, get your shit together. Yes. Everyone's counting on you.
Two very good scenes from Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
She's
oh, maybe the drinking scene as well, where it's like, oh, I've been feeding him all fucking night or whatever.
And then he's like, here, have my child.
I like that.
Yeah, that was good too.
But I don't want him. Like, my wife doesn't want him. I'm good.
But also, like, that whole scene with her being like, she's just fucking done. Like, that came out of, like, nowhere for me. I didn't really see hints of that where she's a terrible person.
Yeah, very.
She don't give a shit. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, she did have a marriage that wasn't really a marriage. So.
Well, yeah, the way she talks so cavalierly about her ex-husband's, I'm like,
yeah,
and like while her current husband is like there,
right? Yeah. Some red flags,
yeah,
just a few.
So they're both like that, and I guess they're you know,
they're perfect for each other because they're fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned Jean Tatlock. Let's talk about her for a little bit.
Oh yeah.
So she meets Oppenheimer at a party. Mm-hmm. They fuck.
Yeah.
And then they talk about. She makes him read the book while.
Right. I had to stifle a laugh.
I was like, what the fuck is this?
I was like, oh, this is how the line's getting in first during a sex scene? I'm going to have to check the history books. I don't know if that happened. Mr. Nolan, is this real? Am I going to have to call Pinocchio on you?
I think, and then there's the other scene that we'll get to in a minute. But,
yeah, they have a really weird sex life.
Yes.
But I'm glad that the rumors, or maybe I just got memed really hard. I could have sworn I kept hearing from like multiple different accounts there was going to be a 15-minute sex scene missionary with only Cillian Murphy's ass in the frame. That's I just, you know, and I believed it for a hot minute.
I think he wanted it.
those pale, skinny Irish cheeks.
Oh, guys, he survived on one almond a day.
From I know.
Like, what the
fuck? He did not look healthy.
No, he didn't.
He was just like, he was dedicated to looking as skinny and sad as possible.
That ass would not have been fat.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Two little pancakes slapping together.
It would probably be a skinnier ass than Christian Bale's in The Fighter.
Yeah. Oh,
God. All right. That's enough
ass. Anyway, enough about asses.
Enough ass talk.
For now.
Interesting way to get to the iconic line that we know Oppenheimer
said. It's a weird way to put that.
Oh, yeah. Thankfully, he says it again in a different context, the original content.
It was Strauss remembering... that he was embarrassed by.
Right. So he had a kind of a Rashomon thing going on where it's you got his perspective. He's laying it. He's kind of downplaying it a little bit.
Yeah,
then Rami Malek comes in. Like,
silly Oppenheimer. Oh, he's at it again.
I wasn't embarrassed. I have my pride. It's okay.
I'm going to kill that guy.
Well, yeah, but it's funny. It's like that little jab made him destroy his entire career.
Yeah. Yeah, very spiteful.
Yeah,
he's an evil dude.
It's another.
Not that Oppenheimer's an angel, but
no.
Another theme of like personal bias, how absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. The fact that the government is just run by a bunch of insecure jerks, like
man babies.
Yeah. Which I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is so good in this movie; it's absurd.
Yeah, we haven't talked about him at all.
I feel even more angry at Marvel for chaining him to their franchise
when he could be doing good movies.
Oh yeah, I mean I knew he was great. But I mean, we didn't know it was the drugs or anything.
And it's no Tropic Thunder, but it's a pretty good.
Tropic Thunder is fucking amazing, dude. No, but I think my favorite performance from him is Less Than Zero, and like, I don't really hear that one talked about too much.
I haven't seen it,
especially the end. Like it just like kicks you in the balls.
I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah.
I think you'll probably get a nod for supporting actor in this.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
I would hope so.
Good.
Has he ever gotten anything before? Or he won for Chaplin. So okay.
I think so. Or at least got nominated.
I think he got nominated. I don't think he's won.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be fantastic. Either him or Matt Damon, because they're both fantastic.
Yeah.
But so is Jason Clarke. Like all the supporting cast. It's like
pretty incredible. It'll be like this year's Emmys where it was like half of the supporting actor nominations were from The White Lotus and the other half were from Succession.
Right, yeah.
So like half from Oppenheimer, and if I had my way, half from Asteroid City. But
Or, you know, or Ryan Gosling, as we'll talk about next week.
Ooh.
Anyway.
I look forward to watching that episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, same.
Yeah.
They got Nick. Big Barbie fan.
Yeah, Nick.
I wore pink.
Nick, you'll be joining us next week for that, I believe.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah. Very good. I will happily return.
We meet Kitty for the first time at a party with whoever her husband is, some rich dude who doesn't matter.
Some guy.
He's some guy. It's not
some old guy. She's not getting the right action from him. She needs some hot Killian action. Yeah,
some hot Killian action. They go on horseback riding in Los Alamos for some reason. Okay.
Yeah, he just loves Los Alamos for no reason.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to ruin my enjoyment of this place by putting the worst place ever on top of
it. I mean, his brother and him had a ranch out there. That's true, but like... Right.
Because it's almost that Western ideology, the manifest destiny. I'm going to go out and conquer the desert.
Oh, because he's conquering like new terrain and science and stuff.
Right. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. He sees a canvas.
Yeah.
Paints it with blood.
Very good, Nick. Thank you for finishing my sentence.
Yes, yeah.
I love it.
Jesus.
Basically, there's also the... I noticed, like, again, back to the casting, the kid who plays Cameron in Halloween, that guy, the Allison's boyfriend, he's in there, and then he was like interacting. Who else was? Oh my God, there's somebody. Oh, the Rashav, the communist guy that they.
Chevalier. Yes.
He's the podcaster in Halloween 2.
That's right.
I don't know
that's
how you catch all these cameos, or do you just look up the cast list?
No, I just know their face. Because also, I thought it was really funny because that same guy was in Game of Thrones. He was the knight. He was the knight that gets killed in like the first episode or whatever, in the tourney.
His face did look familiar.
Then he plays twins in House of the Dragon.
Hmm.
Huh.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, do we want to talk about
the time we almost killed the guy?
The first really character beat. Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me of that. So,
Kenneth Branagh's first scene, and also the scene where, like, it's also funny because he poisoned a guy and he didn't even hate him. He was just like, I didn't really like what he was saying. So I injected his apple with like cyanide or whatever.
Cyanide.
Literal. What the fuck?
And he's like, he's ready to murder a professor because he didn't get a good grade. And I'm this guy isn't great. They're setting up very early. This guy may not have the best moral standing.
No.
Yeah.
And the guy's...
He just needs to get laid.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was like, wait a minute, did I never hear that Oppenheimer killed a guy in college? And then you see him rushing because he's like, oh shit, I almost poisoned my professor. Mm-hmm. And he's like running to his classroom. And like Kenneth Branagh, this famous scientist, Niels Bohr, right? Mm-hmm. Is about to like take a bite of his professor's apple. He's just like, oh, there's a worm in it. Oh, slaps it into the garbage.
I wonder if that's in the book that this is based off of, American Prometheus.
Yeah,
I don't know what that scene is, but I mean, that'd be
cool. I don't have 5 months free to read it since it's 700 pages long.
Jesus.
Thick boy.
Very thick boy.
Oh, that's why this movie's 3 hours long.
Yes. Yeah. And that's also why the pace is so cranked up, because there's just so much you got to get through.
Yeah.
There's politics. There's interpersonal stuff. There's romantic stuff. There's physics.
There's lots of changing.
It's incredible.
There's physics.
There certainly is.
So there's this thing with the black and white film and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Kodak developed its first ever black and white film for IMAX for this movie.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. Christopher Nolan. No way else could do that except Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. And maybe another big name director, but like
Tarantino.
Cameron also changed the technology.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, he would never touch film back again. He's only going to do digital.
Sticking digital.
Yeah.
It's weird to see two like titans in film be so divided on this issue, where it's like, I think Nolan's kind of losing though, because it's like, even if you film it on film, it's going to get digitized for the mass audience.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a bit of a lose-lose.
Yeah.
All right. So back to him teaching at Berkeley, which we didn't talk about Einstein, but we can talk about him a little later. So
who plays him?
Tom Conti.
Never heard of him.
He's been in a couple of things.
Yeah. Anyway, so he starts teaching these theory classes at Berkeley, and eventually gets more and more students and all that stuff. And the guy who hired him, Josh Hartnett's character,
glad he's back.
Doing so good.
He's back, and he has a great turn in this.
Yeah, yeah. he was real good. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that from him at all. No. And damn, yeah, he was. Yeah, he's very understanding at first. Then he's just like, "The fuck you doing with this politics in the classroom? Like, what are you doing, man?
Like, keep it in the bedroom. Keep your politics in the bedroom. I don't want to hear it."
It's great.
I love that image of Oppenheimer in the bunker with the camera next to him, because it's almost like a filmmaker in a projection booth.
Lights
up his face.
That's brilliant.
That image is incredible. It's one of my favorite shots.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easily.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Leslie Groves, my favorite character, Matt Damon. He is introduced and basically tasks Oppenheimer like, "Hey, you want to run the Manhattan Project?" "Sure." "Cool." I love the first scene he was in. Like, I don't remember why I love it, but it's just so good. Like, their back and forth is just so good.
Just like, "You're egotistical. You're a piece of shit." But and he's like, "Yeah, but I'm brilliant." And then he's like, "That's not important when you're a scientist. Everyone's brilliant.
Yeah.
You need to bring more to the table."
Yeah.
Nolan wrote the script for this, right?
Yes.
So where was this kind of witty back and forth in all the other movies?
Was he writing his other
scripts? "Where was my hot sauce?" That's a genius line.
David S. Goyer wrote most of the Dark Knight stuff, so I think that was more his stuff than Nolan.
I don't think of Nolan when it comes to like dialogue. And I'm thinking he had two really good back and forth scenes. Yeah. This scene that Dan's talking about, and then the one with Emily Blunt and what's his name?
Roger Robb.
Roger Robb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love that scene.
Yeah.
So basically, he has an 18-month head start on the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Alvarez then figures out the atom stabilization, which is what's his face's character.
Is that Alex Wolff?
Alex Wolff. Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah.
His character.
Hi, Alex Wolff. Bye, Alex Wolff. Thanks for stopping by.
They're and gone.
Then they need to figure out the team. They need to assemble the team. And
Loki like an Avengers moment, like
Avengers with scientists.
Yeah. Oppenheimer literally has a suit up moment when
he puts the hat back on.
Albert Einstein's like, "I'm putting together a team."
One of the guys they hire, not Josh Peck or Jack Quaid, the other guy, the third guy in the hallway. And they, talked about this earlier, that Hitler being anti-Semitic is his downfall. And that is what's ultimately cause the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And because he calls it Jewish science.
Right.
Quantum physics, yeah.
How ironic.
So, how ironic. And Josh Peck, spherical!
That above is spherical!
I saw him in the trailers, and I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
What are you doing?
Well, how do you get into this movie?
And he gets to push the button.
He's the button pusher. That's his whole deal.
Launch the bomb?
Yeah.
He's the biggest guy. He does the biggest thing in the movie. It's
so funny.
I saw this one.
It's crazy.
I saw this one TikTok where this guy was like saying, "Yeah, I was an extra on Oppenheimer. You can see me there in the background." So I think he actually was. But he made up this story how he was in the scene where they were going to drop the bomb. And he was just like, "Yeah, then so Josh Peck's about to push the button and he's like, it's kabloomy time." And then Nolan is like, "No, Josh, just say the line I wrote." "Yeah, I gotcha. All right, kablammo."
I think he's a little more professional than that, but it is funny to imagine.
These are the reasons why this is the fourth biggest box office opening weekend of all time.
What did drag people to Oppenheimer? What was it? Do people really care about Oppenheimer? Was it the Barbenheimer thing?
Think, was Barbenheimer.
So
the fact that two opposites.
I would love an exit poll.
And they contrast. they contrast so well and fit together just enough to make. Mm-hmm. To make it a crazy weekend.
It's also a great dad movie. You can definitely, everyone can take their dad to this movie. Dads will have a great time watching Oppenheimer.
Just make sure you get up when Florence Pugh is on screen.
Be like, "I have to go to the bathroom for 3 minutes and 25 seconds exactly." So your dad can have a nice moment by himself and you don't have to see him.
I looked at the IMDb summary. I know what's coming.
Oh, God. And don't take your dad to Barbie. let's see here. So where were we? Okay. Yo, Los Alamos. So, they have the scene of the jars and they're filling up with like how much plutonium they have and how much,
Uranium.
Uranium. That's the other one. It's that's the
uranium. A great tool to use for the audience to see, like, this is the progress we're making into the story, and you know, so I'm like, great. Yeah, genius. The
montages are great.
It's it's so simple yet so elegant.
Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And then we haven't talked about Robert Downey that much. I don't know how to talk about him in this capacity. He's just like in a courtroom, or not even a courtroom, but it's
a Senate hearing.
It's Senate hearing. It's like he's just getting, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, shit. And just he's up for a cabinet position. That's the word.
Yep. So, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
He's up for that. And basically, this is confirming whether he gets it or not.
So, do we know the position? Because it's a Secretary of War.
I don't know which one.
Yeah, but in the cabinet. One of the big positions. Presidential cabinets. Like, it would have made his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, what his position, though.
It didn't say.
I'm going to Google it.
Google it, Nick.
Yeah, they mentioned Secretary of War, which I thought was funny, because now it's defense. They didn't want to use war anymore, because it didn't...
Right.
It sounded more threatening than it needed to be. But, yeah, so he's just in the courtroom, and he's just deflecting, and then I like this little build-up. It's a little tiny thing, but he's just like, who's the scientist? Like, who's coming in to totally rip me to shreds? And I'll admit, I was kind of like confused and like surprised. I'm like, oh, and they give him a little tiny arc with, you know, it's Rami Malek who, through the two scenes that he's in with Oppenheimer, just completely disrespects him and like knocks the shit out of his hands.
Rips him
in shit. Yeah. He's like, fuck this guy. And then
Secretary of Commerce.
Okay. Commerce.
Rami Malek wasn't even like mentioned to be in this movie until June of this year. Like, that's when he was first shown he was in this movie.
No one really flexed with, like, how he got big actors to just do the littlest scenes. He's just like,
well, he had a pretty big scene. I mean,
yeah, that was pretty climactic. But earlier, he didn't have any lines. He just popped in a scene. Yeah. So I was just like, oh, Rami, go Rami.
Well, yeah, I mean, Josh Hartnett isn't as big as he was, but like, even he has a diminished role for what I would think he would do.
Right.
Gary Oldman, obviously, one scene. It was great.
But iconic.
We're going to get to him in a little bit.
Watch him win an Oscar, and then he'll be like the second. God. Or like, because Elizabeth, or Judy Dench won for Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah.
Shortest amount of screen time ever. I think it was like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's possible. He could do it.
Yeah.
All right. Back to Gene Tetlock. Oh, yeah. All right, so the weirdest fucking scene in the movie.
Yep.
They're just sitting naked in chairs, just both of them.
Because they're intellectuals, Dan.
What the fuck was that?
He went to visit her in New York.
They fuck with their brains.
San Francisco, wherever.
Yeah.
And like,
it's intimacy.
It's weird. Intimacy,
it's comfort for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why Robert didn't have his legs spread, because he's a dude.
It's disappointing.
I mean, it's just like, I wanted to see Killian hang Don. Come on. You're going to win an Oscar if you hang Don. Come on.
I mean,
give the people what they want.
And then she's... The back of the Senate hearing, and randomly she's just riding him again. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
I think it was trying to just show where he was mentally.
Mentally, yes, easily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's where the wife was.
And it was her perspective, imagining him. Because she imagines, like, oh, my husband, the cheater. Yeah. There's his real love is this random manic pixie communist girl.
Because part of this hearing is to destabilize Robert's entire life, including his marriage.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think that part is true, though. Like, he did have a weird obsession with her after she told him no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I like the running bit where she throws out his flowers.
Yeah.
He's got to be somehow, like, turned on a little bit when that happens.
By the rejection. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be some weird thing with him right there.
With the flowers, she ended up pushing daisies anyway. So, I mean.
Oh, bazinga. Bazinga.
And so, yeah.
Wow.
She got so depressed that he didn't want to see her anymore. She either killed herself or was killed, because there was a hand on her at one point, like she was getting drowned.
I was thinking that was the police pulling her out, but.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought I was seeing stuff, because I thought she was like holding herself down.
It's an alternate interpretation, because nobody knows what happened to her. She either drowned or she could have been killed off. She knew too much, maybe. Who knows?
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. I can see that being,
Yeah.
But they didn't kill the Chevalier.
No, they did not.
They just kind of deported him, I think.
Well, they made the joke, oh, we'll just kill him. Nah, we won't do that.
Just kidding. Maybe.
No. Who said that?
That's why I love Matt Damon so much in this movie.
He really sells
He's great.
Yeah.
All right, so... the big part of the movie. It's after the Christmas thing, and they finally got enough plutonium and uranium to make this bomb.
It is go time.
Trinity test.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's go time.
Let's get all the scotch tape to tape the bomb together.
Yeah.
Matt Damon says,
super nervous. Yeah.
What's his face? Grove says this line about, you know, is there a chance we actually blow up the world? I saw a TikTok on this. Don't remember who the guy is, but what if the nitrogen and oxygen in the air combine to make a bigger blast than anticipated? You would need a bomb to be bigger and more quantities of deuterium in the ocean to make it actually blow up the world. The scientists did studies on this in the 1970s.
Oh.
Like, they redid the math and everything.
Interesting. That
would have been done. It's like near zero, but like it could be catastrophic if under the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Which are, if you blew it up underwater?
No, basically there needs to be just more of this element, deuterium or whatever the hell it is, in the ocean or in the...
Deuterium? I've never heard of that element.
I don't know if it's an element, but it's like, it's a TikTok, bro. Science, I don't know. I don't know. Okay.
If things were slightly different, we all could, might not exist.
Yeah. It does stand to reason, though, because you would think, I'm not a physicist, clearly.
None of us are.
I'm wearing a sweatshirt.
Yeah. not wearing a surprise shirt.
but
a Mandy shirt.
But the thing is, like, you would, theoretically, I would think, like, okay, if neutrons are bumping into neutrons, because that's what he says, like, it's going to create a chain effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, every atom has a neutron, right?
I think so.
Or a nucleus. Well, the nucleus is like
the center
with the quarks. That has the quarks in it.
The brain.
Yeah. And the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah, so remember, we all know that. Don't talk to us like we're stupid.
We're not children.
Come on.
My fifth grade brain remembers that.
Nothing else.
But yeah, I don't know. The way the visualization they showed it in the movie, I'm just like, oh, it's going to just ping pong, ping pong, ping pong.
Yeah.
And then it's going to, you know, it's going to blow up everything.
Yeah. And isn't the whole movie about causes and effects?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about, hey, we made this bomb. Now it's out in the world.
It's a near 0%.
The idea of almost... later on in life, there will be so many more bombs that the world will blow up eventually.
Instead of literally a chain of reaction, it's metaphorically.
They sprinkle these shots in a little bit as we find out at the end that it's the nukes going up. They sprinkle these shots in a little bit.
Yeah, it goes like, into his brain and all his nightmare scenarios.
Oh, man.
And also one of the most haunting visuals is at the press conference where he's like, yeah, we won, but at what cost? Yeah. Like you see him take a step and he's like stepping in like a charred corpse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is where his mind's at. No wonder he's so miserable.
Yeah.
Just thinking he's stepping on corpses wherever he goes.
Horrific scene.
And this surrealism just keeps getting turned up and up and up and up as we see people screaming, shouting. Are they cheering? Are they applauding? Are they crying?
Yeah.
Is some people having an intimate moment underneath the bleachers? What's going on with that?
I noticed that. Well,
and that phenomenal close up on Killian with the background just destabilizing.
Oh,
it's incredible.
Yeah, they do that a few times in this movie, and it's really well done.
So good.
Yeah.
So we missed the countdown. So the whole countdown scene is fucking fantastic. It's just like,
that's probably the most tense I've ever been.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it's incredible. Cause we know what happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spherical.
And like
the world didn't blow up. Right. We're all still here.
Yeah. But like, it's like still like, what if? Yeah. But the thing is, there was two buildups. Like, there was like the countdown, obviously goes off. See like a big light show for like a good minute.
Yeah.
And then the sound comes in. Because I was bracing myself.
Like, yeah, I was like, the sound's going to be really loud.
Oh, no.
They tease that with the explosions earlier in the movie that they take a second to like reach.
Yeah. Shop, yeah.
Like, that's real life. That's how explosions are. So, I mean, it's
I just want to
preparing you for it.
Quick shout out to Jennifer Lame, who is the editor of the film. She's also worked on Hereditary, Marriage Story, Meyerowitz Stories, Wakanda Forever somehow, which is interesting.
It was great. I actually liked that movie. But anyway.
But
the resume.
Yeah, and I feel like the editing's a big part of the pacing.
I agree.
And it's great because so much of the movie is montage and jumping around, and then the Trinity test, you're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're stuck in real time seeing that countdown happen.
Yeah, in that bunker just before the countdown.
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer says they'll know if the bomb's successful in an hour and 52 minutes, which is an hour and 52 minutes into the movie when he says that.
Oh, trippy.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. Yeah.
Nice little detail there.
I give that a lot of credit. The amount of planning that would have to go into that.
Oh my God.
When I do a regular YouTube, when I do a regular YouTube video
to get it just right.
They just say like they
1 minute.
Right, next. It'll be a minute.
Nuts.
2 minutes. Yeah, but no, like just like I did a script for a video and I timed it out and I plugged it into like a script timer.
Yeah.
It said 20 minutes. The actual cut turned into 10.
Yep.
Damn it.
Where does 10 minutes go? Like, I don't talk that fast. So I do like the fact that he's not like any lesser filmmaker, I think, would just make like, oh, he's haunted by the sound of the bomb. Yeah. He's hearing it. But no, he's not haunted by that. He's haunted by the sound of the people stomping in the bleachers.
Oh, yeah.
Him cheering him on.
Shaking.
Oh, my so God. Cool.
Yeah.
This movie was made for IMAX, and he's fucking right.
Yeah. I felt it.
The sound alone is just worthy of it.
In my bones.
Literally.
My bones are aching.
Your bones are aching, your ass is shaking.
This'll cure your arthritis.
All
right, so we talked about the fallout and the speech. That speech you had in the gym.
There's been some recent controversy after the weekend of the film coming out. People are concerned that there isn't actual footage of Nagasaki and of Hiroshima.
Okay.
And the lack of representation with Asian characters. Oh, okay. And I don't know if I fully understand or agree with that. Because that's not what the movie's about.
It's clearly about
Oppenheimer. Watch a different movie about the fallout of Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Hiroshima is great about that.
What's it called? The Clint Eastwood movie. Tales from Iwo Jima?
Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm. It's not important to the story. I mean, it doesn't further the story. Like, they mention it. We all know what happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean...
Yeah.
And they also don't cut to Germany during the German part of the war. Right. So why
show Heisenberg
would you
once.
That's a very good point.
Japan. Because it is called Oppenheimer, not Oppenheimer and Japan. To cut over there and see, like, other perspectives when it's from his...
Yeah. Like, I think all of us are all for representation and how all that works. So, like... But who cares? It's not important. It doesn't further the story.
And also, considering that this movie, that Nolan is so insistent on being accurate to this particular story, like, because you might hear some people criticizing that the Congress was only white guys.
Right.
It literally was, though.
It literally was.
Yeah. Or like Dunkirk. I remember that was a concern when Dunkirk came out.
Yeah, but it's like
that's how it was.
If you're,
I know the Tuskegee Airmen were around, but
he's looking
America.
At this as an objective lens. This is literally what happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you want to tell a story like Hamilton, where like that's the point, go for it.
I would love to see that, but you know, oh well. But I think the scene when he's in the projection room and he's hearing the stories of Hiroshima. And
my God!
It's almost like, kind of more harrowing, you know, because you don't even get to see
it. Over 100,000.
Your imagination,
exactly.
Yeah, 100,000 dead instantly, and then like 50,000 to 60,000 afterwards. Like Jesus Christ!
And still today,
still today, it's still
the nuclear half life is still floating around those areas. So it just shows how nightmarish.
It's also crazy because Chernobyl was cleared out immediately.
Yeah,
It's probably worse, but like still, like. Hiroshima and Nagasaki are still kind of populated.
Straight up fucking meltdown there.
I think the acid rain is the one that scared me the most when I first learned
bring
about it.
Bring the sheets inside. Yeah. Every time he told his wife, like, bring the sheets inside. Yes. Just like, because the rain from the nuclear fallout is going to radiate the laundry and then give them all cancer. It's just like, oh, fuck. Even that little line is
that's
just so terrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact they use it as like a kind of a triumphant, like, inside joke for them.
God,
like, it's like, we did it. Bring the sheets inside. You don't want to die.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do all to all these people.
Like, oh, shit.
Stuff, the whole second half is him dealing with, like him personally being like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Development of Strauss. Get more development with Strauss.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about... Well, yeah, there's obviously more Strauss stuff. So, not much else we can really talk about Strauss. It's just him being a dickhead, as usual.
Yeah, we've covered
it. So, that's literally all Robert character is, and I love it.
I do like that they plant seeds going back, and they think like, oh, well, there was a spy. There was, you know, we kicked this off with the Soviets.
Yeah.
And and the talks with in that it was like a dinner or something where like Oppenheimer's disagreeing with Strauss and he's like, you know, what's next? We're not gonna do this again. Like we just did it.
I forgot about that.
And David Dalmatian, I don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah.
He's creeping in the
guy who always plays Dalmatian.
And we love him for it.
Is he a real person?
Borden, yeah.
Borden, was he a real guy? Because another one of Nolan's protagonists in Prestige, Christian Bale, was Borden. It was the one with the twins. Or he was the twin.
Yeah, I don't think he would have made up a guy.
The spy. He was the spy, right?
No, it was the more Russian-looking one.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, he had an important thing. He had an important part of the end, though.
Well, he was the guy who he got the dossier from Strauss to completely discredit him because he, you know, Strauss can't do it himself. Right. And then Roger Robb's also an inside man. He's like, yeah, you're totally right.
I'm talking about Alden Ehrenreich in this either. Like,
oh my God, he's
great.
Oh, he's great. One of his best performances. And also Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan, too.
Oh, yeah.
He was so good and like.
I'm glad he's back.
Good at being like a.
Dick. Oh, you didn't like him?
No, I'm glad that he's back. I liked him, and Chronicle was amazing.
Yeah.
And then Amazing Spider-Man 2.
And everyone's favorite movie of 2017, Valerian.
Who could forget?
Oh, what? Valerian. What's that one?
Sean's obsessed with that one.
He actually does like that one a lot.
Oh, I'm jealous of him.
I wanted to so bad.
All right, so Truman. Let's get to Truman.
Oh, Truman.
Nick, we'll let you take the stage.
So... I definitely, before I saw this movie, I'm a Cold War studier. It's one of my favorite eras to look into because it's so complicated and murky and morally questionable. So this is really what starts the Cold War. And so we see Truman, played by Gary Oldman excellently in his one scene, sticks out more than a lot of the other characters in terms of the quality of performance. But Truman is like, yeah, I want to see the bomb guy. I like the bomb guy. Bring him in. Come on, bomb guy. I want to give you a handshake. And then he sees Oppenheimer, and he's just like, Jesus Christ, what have I done? I'm going to fucking kill myself. And he's like, you're really bumming me out, guy. What the fuck?
And the guy who made the bomb. Yeah, just dropped
like,
it.
I dropped it. You shut the fuck up. I'm the bad guy, and I like it.
And he gets a hanky.
Yeah, he's like, I feel like I have
blood on my hands. Oh, he's like, cry about it? I thought he meant like, I have blood on my hands here. Wipe off your hands with my handkerchief.
Well, it could have been either way. Okay. Probably the blood.
It wasn't blood.
Yeah. But
cry about it, bitch.
But no, that scene did actually happen. Well, it all probably actually happened. But that scene, like in particular, in real life, as Oppenheimer was leaving the room, like, never bring that fucking cretin in here again.
Crybaby.
In this, they changed it to crybaby, but it was still like, wow, when the president fucking calls you a crybaby bitch, that's gotta sting. That's gotta hurt.
Well, maybe he just became like so mean after the United Nations fell apart. He was just like, everyone else is dumb. I was the right one.
Yeah, no, Truman's kind of like a dick, especially following FDR, like one of the greatest presidents. Like, following this guy's like, yeah, I dropped the bomb. That's my whole thing. That's what everyone remembers me for.
Yeah.
And then
And possibly the aliens.
What?
Aliens?
Oh, was he Roswell?
Yeah, wasn't he Roswell?
Was that 47, I think.
I don't know. I'm a history guy, but I don't know
Eisenhower?
That.
Eisenhower? I don't know.
Eisenhower's 50s, at least. Yeah, because I remember, because that's the international highway system. I remember,
Not important. Anyway.
No, he was after Truman.
Do you know, fellow viewers? Let us know in the comments section below.
Like and subscribe. Sorry. That's not my thing. That's your thing. I can't take that from you.
I do really like
that. No, put it back.
I really like that they do treat him like Gary Oldman plays it like he's just a 3-year-old with these like with Tonka trucks. It's like, these are my toys. And I won.
He's just like, I'm going to drop more bombs. I don't care. Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here. He just like, is really like a dick and he's like, I bet the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki don't care because they're fucking dead because I killed them. Bro.
They're so metal.
And the way the music cuts out, too.
Yeah.
There's no breathing room at that point. No, it's just as terrifying as a Trinity test. You're like, this is a president's
president just
words.
Being a dick and being like, I'll start an arms race. I'll finish an arms race, bro.
I don't know if there's another important scene until Emily Blunt's next scene in the interview. If anybody has anything.
No.
Yeah. Is, well, I can't tell if Rami Malek's scene comes before or after that. But
it's after that.
Okay.
Mm. All right. So, yeah, Emily Blunt's scene, she's basically asked to prove who her husband is and as a person and not a commie. So,
because this is the beginning of the McCarthy thing.
She's just going back and forth with Jason Clarke's character. Oh. It's so good.
That's great.
She's just pissing him off. He's just like, what do you mean?
But it's also really cool that she's able in real time to pick out the logical fallacies that he's throwing at her.
Yeah. It's like, oh, your semantics are wrong, Jason Isaacs, so you can take your argument and fuck yourself.
Jason Clarke.
Not very close. Yeah. but fantastic scene. Yeah. Her best scene in the movie.
Yeah. Then there's the kind of layer between her and Oppenheimer where Obi's just like, I'm a martyr. He shakes his hand with the Ben Safdie. I forgot his name.
Teller.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, I totally betrayed you right there. But he's like, I still respect your work. You're a good scientist.
And yeah, Emily Blunt.
She's like, why do you got to be such a bitch?
Literally, like, yeah. And she's like, I don't understand. You know.
And then Kitty ends up never shaking his hand at the end of the movie either.
She snubbed him.
No, well, she's like, no, fuck you.
She should,
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, she...
Fake friends.
He was kind of like a linchpin in destroying their careers publicly. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
And...
So Strauss is undoing. That's kind of where we are at this point.
Yeah, right. a great scene.
Beautiful.
Holden Ehrenreich just being like, bro, you're a dick.
He's like, this whole conversation, I've only known you for an hour, but fuck you.
Yeah, Strauss is like, yeah, it turns out I played everyone and I'm a genius and everyone's dumb except me. Oops. Everything.
I didn't get the position. No shit.
And he's just so devastated. I'm like, oh, it's so cathartic. It's so satisfying. Seeing it blow up in his face like an atom bomb.
Yep. And then we finally hear what Einstein, who shows up a few times, his most important scene is this last one.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like the Rosebud moment. It's very much like,
I'm
seeing something. Very What's going on there? We never really knew what he said.
Go back to that a few times.
Yeah
they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Yeah,
and what does he say, Dan? What does he say?
Well, basically, you're about to destroy the world. You've changed it to, and we can't go back from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a new regime. It's a new world order in a way.
Ooh,
yeah.
Crossover.
Where's Captain America? End credit scene.
Where's the post credit scene? Come on. Yeah. But then
and you see that slow pan into his or zoom into his face, just like.
Yeah,
fuck.
But the last line of the movie is, "I think we already did destroy the world." I'm just like, "Oh fuck!"
Yep,
that was like a devastating, beautiful line. Absolutely incredible.
You already have.
Yep. Also, there's a really cool little bit where it's just like Strauss is, as a character, kind of summed up in like one line. I was just like, you kept obsessing about this little conversation between Oppenheimer and Einstein, and thinking they're talking about you. It could have been for something more important, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like the end of the world. I don't know.
You know,
but no, it's all about you.
Like yeah.
Everyone loves me. You don't understand. I'm going to be the best Secretary of Commerce ever.
I'm misunderstood.
No one gets me. Oh, Mom. I don't know. I just hated him. It was so great to see him fail.
Fantastic. They also do a great job mirroring what the beginning shot and an ending shot, because it opens up on the rain coming on down on the pond. Yeah. So you're seeing it from Oppenheimer's perspective, and then it's almost like you're seeing it from the water's perspective at the closing shot.
Yeah.
So we're fully transitioned.
The acid rain.
Once again, action and reaction as well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Go Newton.
Bookend. Yeah, this movie was deeply emotional, devastating, and fuck, man. Like, the second time watching it got so much better, and...
Helps not being drunk. It's a movie you need to be sober
for. I wasn't drunk,
for.
But I wasn't
okay,
sober.
Tipsy.
I wasn't all the way there.
It's a sobering movie.
I was a
movie.
Few high noons deep, all
it's
right?
It's a sobering movie, and you need to be sober for
you
it.
You really do. You need to pay attention. You need to be able to pay attention details. To this movie. It's... Yeah, a lot of details. A lot of different characters playing different roles. A lot of differing angles and timelines. It's a whole mess, but it's so it works so well.
Oh, yeah. So do we go over what the black and white means and what the color means? Because
So the color is objective, right?
Subjective.
Goddamn.
You were close, Dan.
Subjective. It was a 50-50 chance. I'm sorry.
You get the.
Color stuff is subjective. Black and white is objective. And also, like, differing point of view. So, like, what's his face?
Strauss.
Strauss's view is the black and white. Mm-hmm. And Oppie's is the color.
Oppie.
Oppie.
So, yeah. That's. I think that's a pretty widely known thing right now at this point.
Yeah. Weren't they chanting that at the...
They were.
Oppie. Yeah.
Oppie. 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 Oppie.
At Christmas, I think they were chanting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, after all that, I think we give this movie an 87.
87 from Dan.
It's solid.
I'm
going
to go...
You can go.
I'm going to go 90.
Yeah?
I think it's a very solid Christopher Nolan movie. I wanted to give it a 95, but I always do this recency bias, so I'm gonna temper my expectations a little bit. I'll do 90.
Mm-hmm. Cameron?
90. Yes. Right. I'm going to copy Danny.
I'm going to say... Oh, sorry.
No. That's all I got.
Okay.
That's all you have?
All right. I'm going to say 92.
Ooh.
Oh.
And part of that is I'm a history buff, and I love all things history, and this was like one of the most important historical events and one of the most important movies, I feel like. So this is going to go down in history, which is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Nolan's best.
But yeah, we're Seen It Before. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok with the handle @SeenItBeforeCast. That's S-C-E-N-E at Beforecast. And on Twitter with the handle SIB_pod. I'm Dan.
Danny. You can find me at Danny_Wass on my Instagram, my Letterboxd, and Serialized at DJ Wass, or my YouTube channel, which is just Danny Wass.
You guys, you want to plug stuff, Cameron?
Yeah, follow me on Letterboxd, Cam Kircher, also on Twitter at Cam Kircher, or X, or whatever it is. That's
whatever
it is.
X.
As of the day that we're filming it, it's X. I don't know what it's going to be called tomorrow, XXX, but you'll find me.
And my Letterboxd is Nikki Pads, and my Instagram is Sir_Goofbag.
Goddamn right.
Yeah.
Goddamn right. Yeah. So, as I said, Barbie Girls, you are not ready for this movie. You haven't seen it yet.
I'm just confused as to, like, I'm hearing, like, you know, this is the best movie of all time. I'm hearing other ones where it's like it's trash and it hates men and stuff. And then I'm hearing that like it's fine. I'm here. All runs the whole gamut for everything. So like,
well, you're just gonna have to go in blind and not look at any more reviews. Just don't go in with high expectations, because then maybe it'll actually be a little better. You never know.
That's always a good approach.
It's always a good approach.
Right,
maybe
now
do a Dan Walker, drink a couple high noons before you see it.
I was
like it more.
I was hammered for the movie, not gonna lie. So it was a good way to see it.
I have to review this next week. I'm gonna go to it drunk.
I remember the movie. I remember everything about the movie. It wasn't too hard to follow. So I mean Anyway.
Sounds like a great podcast. I can't wait to listen.
Yeah.
Move drunks without being moved.
That was, oh my God, that was 2 years. 3 years ago? 3 years ago.
We still did it 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, till next time, from all of us, see you next time.